Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is David E.J. Berger. You can find me at Carl Jr. on Twitter. And you are now listening to Training Camp Dialed In. I'm bringing you the best of the day's news from the 2019 NFL training camps. And most days, not all days, but most days, I'll be featuring phone calls with writers and reporters from the actual sidelines of camp. There's a reason there's a phone in the pod logo, folks. I'll be getting their first-hand accounts of the action from a fantasy perspective. This is the place to be all August long, as I'll be bringing you 3 to 4 shows per week filled with fantasy football knowledge that's going to help you win your leagues this season. So you need to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. This is season 2, people. We did this all last August. We're doing it all this August. So stick around. Let's have some fun. And we are back. Presented, as always, by Dynasty Happy Hour. And you have to admit it. This is quickly becoming your favorite super niche, month-long, on-the-fly podcast. And that was never more true than today. I had to do a little pivot with the interview, but that's okay. Things are moving quickly. We are now one cryogenically frozen foot deep into the preseason. Multiple footballs have been kicked off. And I want to circle back to what this is all about, being on the fly. We're learning new things every day, and your feelings are going to be changing on the fly. Hell, on Sunday, after I saw Bankert dump it down to Brian Hill, I felt like I had an epiphany about Devontae Freeman. My opinion on him switched in an instant, like it was a body swap movie between me and someone who was way too high on Freeman. But it's been so long since we've seen football, it's hard not to get excited. But I'm here to remind you we have a long way to go. So before you freak out over Jacoby Myers, before you reach up for David Montgomery, before Royce Freeman's nice run tanks your season, before you draft the entire Jets offense, let's remember to stay the course. We've got a long way to go here, people. We should keep our heads down and keep listening to smart people. And lucky for you, I have one today. He's easily one of the hardest working guys in the football media sphere. His name is Travis Wingfield. You can find him at Wingfield NFL. He's the podcast host, lead writer, and page manager for Locked On Dolphins. And he's also a Pac-12 football contributor for FanSided. But there's literally no one more perfect for the Locked On Dolphins podcast than this guy, because that's exactly what he is on this team. He's going to give us the definitive guide to the 2019 Miami Dolphins. And spoiler alert, it's not great. But Travis is. So why don't we bring him on? Ladies and gentlemen, Travis Wingfield. On the fly. Travis, hello, welcome.
Hey, David, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for hopping on. I know it's a busy day. We are recording pre-kickoff to the Miami Dolphins' first preseason game. How excited are you?
Oh, you know, not really overly excited. It's good that football's back, but this is going to be one of the more challenging years in recent memory for the Dolphins. So I think that expectations kind of take away a little bit of that buzz.
Well, we're going to hear all about the team here in a second. But first thing, I'm sorry to do this. I do want to review last year. I know you said this year is going to be frustrating. Last year certainly was as well for Dolphins fans. But like most forgettable things in life today, there's evidence of it on the internet. I know they'd like to forget it. Last year, the Dolphins were 26th in offense with 319 points. But more notable, they were dead last in the league in total plays run with only 878. That's 24 less than the next closest team, which was Arizona. But then head coach Adam Gase is darting his eyes around the Jets now. So what is the new regime of head coach Brian Flores and offensive coordinator Chad O'Shea putting on the field in terms of scheme and formations that's going to breathe new life into this offense?
That's going to be a bigger shift towards more of a running power style team. They want to play good defense and control the clock and try to manage the game at the quarterback position, at least until they have a guy they feel comfortable with that can actually lead them down the field, you know, through the passing game. And they just don't have that guy right now, whether it's Brian Fitzpatrick or Josh Rosen. So they're going to try to establish a type of culture where they, I guess, can out-physical and out-tough you and then try to build on top of that next year. At least that's the goal for what they're trying to do. They brought a fullback onto the roster this year for the first time since 2012. So they're going to go a lot more two tight ends and two back sets and try to be a boring football team from the 1970s, I guess.
Well, boring doesn't bode well for fantasy. Can you expand on the idea of it being boring a little bit?
Well, yeah, they're just not going to there's not going to be a lot of volume in the passing game. You mentioned that, you know, last year they were dead last in plays ran. I wouldn't be surprised if there was only a slight jump above that. I mean, they probably won't have as many three and outs because that was kind of the Adam Gase special, going three and out. But as far as, you know, trying to control the clock and shorten games, I think that's going to be the mindset for them this year. And you're also probably going to have a shared backfield workload between a pair of backs that I'm sure we're going to talk about here shortly.
Yeah, you've already faded the two guys they brought in to play quarterback, but let's talk about them for a second. They brought in two new guys, and the first is brainy journeyman Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the second is hot tub enthusiast Josh Rosen. Fitzpatrick had a roller coaster season for fantasy gamers last year in Tampa Bay, going from wearing gold chains in his post-game press conference to holding a clipboard on the sidelines. Rosen, on the other hand, pretty much stayed at a pace similar to a 14-year-old's moped. Can you give us some insights on this camp battle?
Yeah, right now it looks pretty even. I mean, Coach Flores already came out and said that Fitzpatrick has a comfortable lead, but that was about a week ago, and I was there for that press conference, and it kind of got people curious in the Dolphins media room. But then after that moment, Josh Rosen has consistently outplayed Ryan Fitzpatrick so far in practice since that proclamation. And really probably since the pads came on, he's been a better quarterback. So, and I don't want to go out there and say that the reason, it's not that Rosen's been playing much better than Fitzpatrick or that Rosen's doing anything special. It's just that Fitzpatrick's play has kind of tapered off since he had a strong start to training camp. Right now it's probably pretty even, but Fitzpatrick still has the lead.
So he has the inside lead to start week one, but do you get the feeling, as someone who knows this team like you do and covers it, you're locked on it, is Rosen the future of this franchise?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he wasn't anything really special in college. He had a really bad rookie season, like one of the worst rookie seasons for any quarterback ever. And as like Jared Goff and say that, well, they bounced back. They also had Sean McVay. He also had Sean McVay in his corner, so that makes a big difference. But just watching Josh Rosen for 10 straight days of practice, I mean, typically if you see it, you know it, and I just didn't see it with Josh Rosen. I mean, he had issues hitting stationary targets, and he doesn't trust his eyes very much. He always checks things down. I know he's 22 years old. I know he has room to grow, but I just didn't see it when I was out there at practice all training camp long.
And you faded him in the offseason watching the tape as well, right?
Yeah, went through every game and did every pass and charted it and stuff. And there's a little bit of hope there in regards to how he performs. Like in the fourth quarter, he tends to elevate his game as well as on third and long. But for the most part, he's got timing issues. He's got accuracy issues. He's not going to get off the top of his drop and really off the script. So he basically, to me, is the type of guy that can excel if everything around him is clean. And this Dolphins offense, as far as the offensive line goes, is the worst in the league. The receivers are average, I would say. And the true is probably the same with the running backs as well. So it's just not a good situation for a guy that's just not that great.
You've mentioned the wide receivers are average. Let's go there next. This is definitely a room that needs some sorting out for fantasy gamers. We should start with Kenny Stills, whose boom or bust production has made him more of a quintessential DFS play. But are they doing anything new with him that might lead to more consistency for season-long leagues?
They might find a way to sneak him downfield a little bit more. I mean, that was kind of his MO, the shot plays within the route concepts to allow him to do what he does best and get down the field. But this year, it seems like a lot of their play-action passing game install they were doing was going more towards a different receiver, who I'm sure you're going to talk about next as well. But Kenny Stills, I mean, he's the most consistent guy on this team. He does have a little bit of a drop issue, but he does consistently run the best routes, and of course he is the best deep ball threat. So if you're going to go anywhere on this roster, I mean, I don't know if Kenny Stills is the kind of guy you want to start in a fantasy lineup, but he's liable to have the biggest type of day of all the Dolphins receivers, I think.
After Stills is where it gets tricky, as you mentioned. Lots of sharps are on Albert Wilson. Xavier Howard is on Preston Williams, which was kind of a surprise. There might be two guys somewhere who are still Devontae Parker truthers. Can you give us some insights on how these other guys will be used and who has the biggest upside?
Yeah, you mentioned it right there with Preston Williams. I think that's the guy that you might stash late in your draft and just hope that he kind of blossoms early, because you look at Albert Wilson. I love Albert Wilson. He's a really good player, but he's still battling back hip injury last year that he hasn't gone full speed in the team portion of practice yet. He's been limited every single day. I doubt we'll see him in the preseason. Plus, he's more of a slot receiver, not a guy outside that's going to consistently win one-on-one matchups. So he's probably at best a wide receiver 3 for you in fantasy. And then Jakeem Grant is kind of the same mold. They have to kind of manage his workload because he too has injury issues, even as explosive as he is. And then Devontae Parker, I mean, we say this every year as Dolphins media and Dolphins fans. Every year he has these camps that make us think it's going to be the year. And of course, it never winds up that way. But the good news is he's healthy. And I think that's the biggest obstacle for him, is that he doesn't have these nagging injuries that seem to come up every single camp. He hasn't been reported with any ailments or things that have slowed him down. And he has looked good in training camp so far. So maybe this is the year for Devontae Parker. But I think if you want to go after anybody on this receiving crew, I think it makes the most sense because of the draft value they provide late in the draft, as well as their big boom, or their boom potential, I should say. It's got to be Preston Williams.
Yeah, Parker, that's a pretty big maybe, huh?
Yeah, can you trust the guy after 4 years of you know, not doing anything? I mean, it's a tricky situation. It is interesting that he came back to the Dolphins on this cheap contract, because he probably could have got more money elsewhere. And I actually applaud Devontae for that, because he did say he wanted to come back and change the legacy that he's left so far in Miami. So maybe we have a case of a young man that's finally grown up a little bit. But again, you know, show me. Fool me 4 times, shame on me. Fool me 5 times, shame on you.
Yeah, the classic year 5 breakout, that's not a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's talk about this backfield now. In the early part of this summer, lots of sharps were hyping up Kenyon Drake, who underwhelmed fantasy gamers last year on the ground, but did rack up 53 catches and 5 touchdowns through the air, and had just over 1,000 scrimmage yards. But now that the calendar page has turned to August and camp is in full swing, it's second year and polarizing dynasty prospect Kalen Ballage who is getting buzz. He had some flash at the end of last season as well. Can you clue us into this camp battle? Is this starting job up for grabs?
I think it's going to be exactly what fantasy owners hate, and it's going to be a dead 50-50 share between the two, and there's a really big drop-off after both those guys on the running back depth chart, so you probably won't have to worry about a third vulture coming in and taking snaps from either of them. But as far as their usage, you nailed it on the head. Kenyon Drake is really, in my opinion, one of the elite pass-receiving backs in the National Football League. And then Kalen Ballage, he's not really going to be shifty and make you miss. He's more of a sledgehammer type of runner, and we've actually seen that in a lot of the Dolphins' goal line drills. So as far as fantasy goes, I think Kalen Ballage will be the short yardage touchdown maker. But Kenyon Drake, I mean, if he gets the ball 15 times in a game, one of those times he's going to make a 30, 40-yard play, and they usually in the zone. So it's kind of, do you trust Kenyon Drake to get the big play, or do you trust the Dolphins' offense to get some goal line packages and give Kalen Ballage the football? So, you know, I hate to kind of go down a fairway on you here, but really, either way you go, I think it's probably not a great option.
Yeah, especially if the Dolphins aren't going to be very good and they're not going to be near the goal line very much. How much are you really going to buy into Ballage if that's going to be his role, the goal line? You know, you're not going to get points from someone who's not going to be in position to get the points. So that's really good information. I know he's kind of getting hype. People do like him, so...
I have a couple of interesting notes for you on Kalen Ballage. Last year, we talked about how he's not really going to make you miss. He had 45 touches last year, and on 43 of those touches, he was brought down on the first tackler to get there. So that to me is a little bit scary, because that's your job as a running back, is to make guys miss. And then, you know, you mentioned that the Dolphins probably won't have many goal line opportunities, because this is a team that's probably going to score 17, maybe 20 points in a game. And I think that where you're probably going to see those points come from is the explosive plays from a guy like Kenyon Drake. Kind of talk through this with you, David. I get convinced that I would go after Kenyon Drake over Ballage.
I love it, which is my new catchphrase. I say that literally after every answer sometimes. But I do love that. That's great information. Okay, Drake's currently going in the 5th or 6th round right now. Ballage much later. Who would you draft?
I think it's got to be Drake, just because of the big play explosive ability and the fact that he's... I just trust him more because I know what he is at the stage of his career. I mean, Ballage got a late season call-up last year, and he had the one big run against the Vikings, and I think it was like week 15, where he busted a 75-yard touchdown run, and that was pretty much it for his production. He didn't do anything else throughout the year for the Dolphins. So Drake is a very talented player, but there's also some stuff that goes on behind the scenes with Drake that, you know, maybe kind of holds him back a little bit. And that's probably why he's not been entrusted as this number one workhorse type of guy. But I do think that he's ridiculously talented. So give me Kenyon Drake.
I know Dynasty guys like myself have Myles Gaskin stashed at the back end of rosters. What are they seeing from him? What are you seeing from him? Any sort of camp buzz from this prospect out of Washington?
Yeah, his college production was ridiculous, 1,200 yards in 4 consecutive years on the ground exclusively. He's really at Dolphins camp, he and undrafted rookie Patrick Laird are always the last guys off the field, so you like to see that. But the problem is that undrafted rookie and Patrick Laird is getting reps over Myles Gaskin right now. So honestly, I might probably sell on the Myles Gaskin train right now. And, you know, like I said in the previous segment, after those first two backs, it's really, really thin out here in Miami. So I would probably just avoid the entirety of the Dolphins running back depth chart beyond Ballage and Kenyon Drake.
Copy that. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but let's circle back to that offensive line. It does not sound like a good prognosis for this Miami offense in terms of the big heavies up front. Can you talk about that for a second?
Oh, it's so bad, David. I mean, we've got an all-pro potential guy at left tackle in Laremy Tunsil, who was actually the only player in the NFL that allowed one sack playing 14 or more games last year. In my opinion, he's the best left tackle in football. And move to the other four positions, and you might as well put you and I out there, because right now it's looking bad. They got two rookies going at the two guard spots. They'll probably start in tonight's preseason game against the Falcons. They kicked Jesse Davis out to right tackle, who played all 16 games at right guard last year, and he had a little bit of run at right tackle in 2017 with the Dolphins, so he'll play out there. And then the center, Dan Kilgore, I think he's like 32 years old. He tore his triceps last year. He only played 3 games, and those 3 games weren't very good. So as far as creating running opportunities up the middle, we're talking about two rookies, one of which is undrafted, and a center who has injury issues and doesn't really play with much power. And then you have a right tackle who is average at best. And so just proceed with caution with this Dolphins offense. I think it's going to be a very ugly year for the Dolphins offense in general.
I did play line in high school, but I'm a new dad, and my footwork struggles with pushing the stroller sometimes. So I think those guys probably better than me at this point in my career. But tight end hasn't been a sexy position in Miami for fantasy gamers for a while now. But there was a glimmer of hope when they drafted athletic freak Mike Gesicki out of Penn State last year. He underwhelmed in year one, but he does deserve that it takes tight ends longer to develop narrative hall pass. What is the buzz around him, and will there be anyone worth putting in lineups this year from that tight end room?
I think I actually told you on last year's show that you should go after Mike Gesicki, so I apologize for that after the way he produced in his rookie season. But no, he's kind of in the same boat. He's been relegated to a lot of backup duty. He's been one of the tight ends in 12 personnel when they run one running back and two tight ends onto the field, and he makes miraculous catches down in the red zone every single day at practice, in the one-on-one drills when there's no live hitting and there's no team, you know, no live bullets, so to speak. And the reason for that is because he struggles immensely with contact, and he just can't get off press. He can't get himself through the top of routes when he challenges him physically. And so there's something that has to kind of happen there for him, or change for him in that regard, for him to have a chance to be this touchdown maker that we all hoped he would be. But he hasn't been that. He's been kind of outworked right now by both Nick O'Leary and Durham Smythe. But again, both those guys are more H-back, inline, Y guys that are going to do more in the running game for you than in the passing game. So I hate to keep saying this to your listeners, and I'm sure they probably know this, but I just don't think that the Dolphins are much of a fantasy team at all in 2019. You can probably just put them off the draft board altogether, except for maybe at the running back spot.
Wow. I mean, what is that like for you as someone who's so invested in this team?
I mean, it was expected. They rolled so many assets into next season, and that's kind of where our hope is lying right now. If I'm being totally honest, I'm looking way more forward to the off season than I am the games this year, because to me, these games are all about evaluating to see who is going to be here for the rebuild. I mean, they have 12 draft picks next year. They've got $110 million in cap space, and they kind of put themselves in that position by just eating a bunch of dead money this year and kind of foregoing some draft picks by pushing them back next season. And they kind of had to do that because Mike Tannenbaum, as he is wont to do, he ruins franchises, and he ruined this Dolphins franchise by giving out bad contract after bad contract. And the fact that they were able to kind of erase that in 1 year, to me, that's pretty impressive. Like, they stepped back. They took a look at themselves and said, okay, we have a horrible accounting situation, and our roster is, you know, the guys that produced last year, like, all the guys they got rid of really weren't guys that would be a part of the future, you know, a future rebuild, or even as part of a team that's a championship contender, like a key part of that type of a team, like a Robert Quinn, or even a Cam Wake at this stage of his career, or Ryan Tannehill. I mean, they got rid of a bunch of guys that really were costing more money than they were worth as far as production. And it's exciting to think that they actually have this long-term mindset in place for the first time that I can remember, because it's always been about, let's fill these band-aid or these holes with band-aids and overpriced free agents, and they're finally not doing that. So that's how I get through the fact that we finally might have a glimpse of hope in the future.
So we're fading the Dolphins for season-long leagues, but maybe there's a roll of the dice in DFS with Stills, maybe a Rosen when they're, you know, and against someone where they might have to throw it a ton. That's sort of that's the angle that we're looking for in the Dolphins in 2019.
Yeah, I would play it safe that way. I think Preston Williams and maybe Kenyon Drake, Kalen Ballage are the three guys you might go after. And I would say Albert Wilson or Jakeem Grant, but I just want to see those guys be healthy before I really kind of back them in that way.
Well, we'll get you out of here on what is going to be kind of a tough question considering everything we just talked about. And it sounds like bold is where we need to be thinking if we're thinking of the Miami Dolphins in 2019. But what's your boldest prediction for the Miami Dolphins this season, fantasy-wise?
Well, yeah, I guess I'll go ahead and say the non-fantasy thing first. The problem is we're talking about fantasy, and the offense is just so bad that I can't talk glowingly. But I do think this defense will be pretty good this year under Brian Flores. There's a lot of good, talented players on that side, and the scheme change should help things a lot as well. But the bold prediction, that's really putting me on the spot because I don't have anything nice to say. I'll say Kenyon Drake once again eclipses 1,000 total yards from scrimmage and probably has another 8 or 9 touchdowns as well.
Travis, you've said it all. Where can we find all your stuff?
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm at WingfieldNFL, my last name in NFL, and then also the Locked On Dolphins podcast, a daily podcast. We are actually top 200 on iTunes sports charts, as well as the most listened to Dolphins podcast on the internet, and LockedOnDolphins.com for all the written content you want to know about this Miami Dolphins football team.
And I just want to say, too, as someone who has been following you since we spoke last year, I've been tracking your tweets and everything over the past year, and you really do a great job covering this team. So I highly encourage anyone listening to follow this guy. If you want to know about Miami and the Dolphins, there is literally no one better to talk to.
I appreciate that, David. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks a lot. Well, until next year, man. Thanks again.
Yep, sounds good.
Whoo! It does not sound good in Miami. We are avoiding all Dolphins. You are now dialed in.